Today, we are in the last message on the series on Enough. We're trying to build contentment in the right areas of our lives with how much stuff we have, our material possessions, and building discontent in the right places. Our relationship with God, how often we worship, our prayer lives, digging into scripture. Those are the right things to be discontent about. We remember Jesus' words that my life is not measured by how much I own. Say it with me. My life is not measured by how much I own. Say it again. My life is not measured by how much I own. Last week, we did some nuts and bolts. We did some biblical financial wisdom that aids us in our life purpose to love God, to love others, and to impact the world. And that's really why we're here. We're not here to shop until we drop. We are here to steward our resources, to love God, to love people, and to impact the world. So if our lives are not measured by how much we own, then what should that measurement be? What should our lives be defined by? I still remember one of the first days of my high school economics class. The teacher got the class going, and he said that everybody on the planet, every single one of us, is guided by the mantra, look out for number one. Look out for number one. If anyone tells you otherwise, he said they're lying. It's like, really? Everybody on the planet is operating by looking out for number one. And even as a high school senior, I thought, you know, that really can't be right. Everyone cannot be guided by that principle. And throughout the years, I came to understand that that is a specific kind of ethical system. We call that ethical egoism. You're looking out for number one. That means you do nothing to help out anybody else. Truly, there's no compassion, there's no service, there's no altruism. You really only help out somebody if it benefits you. I mean, that is looking out for number one. And then and now, I don't want to be defined by ethical egoism, looking out for number one, just myself. As a Christian trying to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, it just doesn't fit. When Jesus tells that crowd so long ago, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must look out for number one. No. You must give up your own way. Take up your cross daily and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, but you yourself are lost or destroyed? Now, Jesus has a great church growth strategy here. He tells this crowd, you must give up everything that you want, all your own wants, your desires, your dreams. You must daily follow me, even if it might be hard, really difficult, and really painful at times. Who wants to sign up for that? Instead of telling this crowd, look out for number one, he says, tell them to give up your own way. Don't look out for number one. It's when you give up your life for my sake, for Jesus' sake, that's when you find it. And you'll find life beyond anything you would have imagined. It is one of the great paradoxes of life. To find out who you truly are, you need to surrender yourself to Christ, lock, stock, and barrel. Through a lifetime of following Jesus, you become the person that God intended you to be in the first place. We become fully who we're supposed to be when we surrender our total selves to Jesus. We're not supposed to be defined by our own selfish wants and pursuits. We're supposed to be defined by the generosity we've seen modeled in Jesus. Ultimately, his sacrifice we've seen on the cross, his willingness to give up his life for the salvation of all of humanity, a generosity of time, of talent, of treasure, of spirit, all the resources God has placed under our care, that is how we're supposed to be defined. This is a generosity that does have proper boundaries. We cannot give all of our time, all of our talent, all of our money, because if we did, we would be exhausted with no resources to care for ourselves or our families. God creates the universe and takes the final day of the week, the seventh day of the week, to rest. In creation, he builds proper boundaries and takes time to rest. Jesus, frequently in the Gospels, frequently in these stories about him, he goes away by himself on a mountainside to a quiet place to pray. Jesus himself, God in the flesh, is not healing people 24/7 or teaching 24/7. He is taking time to rest, to rejuvenate, to recuperate, to connect with God before the next mission, the next people he's going to see. To be defined by generosity means we give because we were created to give inside of proper boundaries. We can't give if we're so exhausted we have nothing left. The bottom line, we're not who God has created us to be until we take steps toward extravagant generosity, until we take steps toward giving the best of our time, talent, treasures, all the things God's given us to steward. Now, early in our marriage, Vicky and I were connected to a church. We were part of this church, and we didn't really like it all that much. It was a church, it needed a lot of work, but we still gave. We still gave our time, our talent, our treasures to it. We did so because we needed to give it. It wasn't so the church could use it and need it. They did. They needed it, and they used our dollars and our time and our talent, of course. But we needed to give it. We needed to give it to grow, to be the people God has created us and needs us to be. The saying is true, friends, that we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. Proverbs, the straight-talking, pithy book in our scriptures that has all kinds of verses that look great stitched on a pillow, puts it like this. Give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything. The generous will prosper. Those who refresh others, will they themselves be refreshed? Now, I love that line. Those who refresh others, will they themselves be refreshed? And we know this to be true. Anybody who has served someone else, whether it's in a soup kitchen, a food pantry, a construction project, helping your neighbors clear the snow from their driveway, when we give with absolutely no expectation of something in return, we find ourselves refreshed. We're rejuvenated. We're recharged. We might be exhausted from moving a foot and a half of snow, but there's a deeper soul satisfaction. We feel refreshed. No one has ever said, man, I wish I wouldn't have helped out at that shelter or that food drive or that mission trip or that clothing drive. Man, I really wish I wouldn't have taken time out of my life, out of my day to help someone in need. We might be completely wiped out from winterizing a Christian camp, manning a clothing store, or helping build a church, but we still feel better. We're refreshed because we are not who God has created us to be until we start giving with no expectation of anything in return. Give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything. Paul, that great missionary and church planter, he was training up one of his replacements, a young man named Timothy. Timothy was raised by his Jewish mother, but he wasn't circumcised to give honor to his Greek father. So Timothy ends up being an outsider to both groups. He was an outsider to the Jewish community. He was an outsider in the Greek community. When he was a teenager, he heard this guy named Paul preach, and he's converted to Jesus, and he travels around all over with Paul, and he learns how to be a leader in the church, how to be a leader in the church of all these churches that Paul is starting and shepherding and leading. Paul teaches Timothy to be a leader that does not call attention to themselves, but calls attention to Jesus. He teaches Timothy that ego-centered, ego-prominent leadership has no place in the church. And when we enter this final chapter of 1 Timothy, it's chapter 6, Paul is giving advice to Timothy. How do you deal with people that are doing get-rich-quick schemes off the gospel? Jesus has died and been resurrected, and only a couple decades have passed, and people are already trying to make money off of the good news, trying to hawk wares and make dollars off of the gospel. Paul tells Timothy to steer clear of them. Don't mind them, ignore them, steer clear. Don't build up and don't get this love of money inside of you. Don't worry about building up material possessions that will rust and fade away. And then Paul gives advice to Timothy. How do you deal with Christians who are already rich? You could be rich in Paul's day. You might have been a wealthy landowner in the first century, and you would rent out your farms to tenant farmers, and they'd grow crops and make you very wealthy. You maybe owned a ship or a fleet of trading ships, and you became wealthy because of that. Just to put it in perspective for you, a middle-class American today That would have been rich in Paul's day in the first century. Lots of poverty. Wealth and property, friends, are not sinful in and of themselves. Hear me. Wealth and property are not sinful in and of themselves. They can be used for good and for evil, for selfish or beneficial causes. So for us, what is our motivation for wealth? What is the purpose that we're using the resources God has given us to take care of? When speaking to the Christians who already have wealth, who are rich, Paul says, teach them. Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud, not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works, generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasures as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. The issue is not whether a person has wealth. It is, how is your wealth used for yourself or for others? People matter so much more than our possessions. We know that my life, your life, our lives are not measured by how much we own. We should not be defined by selfishness, but by extravagant generosity that looks out for others with proper boundaries for ourselves. I love that the last line in this passage, Paul says the goal of looking out for others is to experience true life. We are who God made us to be when we give, when we are generous with our time, our talent, and our treasure. It is with sharing with others that we build this foundation for the future to experience true life in this extravagantly generous God that we know. Life is not found in a $1.6 billion lottery ticket, as much as we might think it is. Life is found as we love God and we love others to impact the world. Amanda and Milt have grown in their practice of extravagant generosity over the years. Watch this.
I'm Milt Rue.
And I'm Amanda.
Going into college and through college, I think I had a career goal of making six figures by the time I was 30 and having saved $1 million by the time I was 40. Of course, God had different things in mind. I went to work for a nonprofit, and rather than leaving, I stayed at a nonprofit church, and that's where I met Amanda. And now you know the rest of the story. You can blame her for us not being millionaires.
Or you could say that it was worth more than $1 million because it got me.
And God really just kind of changed some of my perspective on how I was supposed to use the gifts that he had given me and the experiences I had and help nonprofits rather than going into a profit-based business and only looking out for myself. I think it's just through life and finding ways to give not just of our talents or of our treasures, but of our talents and our time also. And whether that's serving here at Legacy and kids or with classes or reaching out in the community and serving with schools or with United Way, we just find that we're better used outside of our own selves.
Stunk at it. Stunk at making sure we were giving a tithe, even though we both worked at a church, actually. It's kind of embarrassing to say that, but we both really, I think, realized now, in retrospect, we were pretty selfish with our resources at that time in our lives. And I think part of that for me was I had this head knowledge of what a person who knows Jesus should do. They should give 10% of their resources. And it wasn't until later on in our marriage that really it became part of my worship. God showed me what it meant to give of my resources as part of my worship, an act of worship. And that really was kind of a game changer. And then right away, we couldn't jump to 10%. We had to have a plan for 2% this year, or, just kind of work our way back up. But now we see it and we try to teach it with our kids as part of our worship.
Thanks, Amanda and Milt. We not only seek to be a people defined by generosity as individuals and as families, but as a community and a church together. As we are generous as individuals, God can do incredible things through us as a church. You hear Legacy's vision and mission statement every time we take in new members. A vision statement is a far-reaching, lofty goal, and a mission statement gives you the practices, the particulars of how we live out that vision statement. Let's say our vision statement together. Because of the legacy we've received, we build the legacy God desires to leave the legacy the world needs. So what kind of legacy have we received? We began as a church 121 years ago as an act of generosity. A church in Mandan felt the call to plant a church across the river. They didn't have to do that. They could have been perfectly content with their church, their building, where they were in Mandan, and what God was doing right there. But they weren't. They felt the apostolic, the entrepreneurial call to reach new people in a new place. They were generous with their time, their people, and their treasure. We exist today here on Durango Drive because 121 years ago of a generosity of a church in Mandan, more than 100 years ago. It's incredible. That's why we're here today. You can spot the generosity all throughout our history, the countless mission trips and Sunday school classes and youth groups and service projects. We were involved in the early 1900s in starting the Protestant Hospital in Bismarck. You know it today as Sanford Hospital. It was generosity of time and talent that made that happen. We're in our third facility here today. We moved from our original facility on 7th and Rosser, which is pretty sure is now a parking lot for a hospital, to 11th and F. That's now Open Door Baptist Church. And now here we are today. There were so many acts of generosity in every single one of those moves. None of those buildings magically appeared there one day. It all took efforts of praying and talent and resources and study to reflect on these moves. People giving their treasure to finance the projects, of their talent to make sure the best facility was constructed to help reach more people for Jesus. I mean, that's the bottom line mission of any church everywhere, to reach more people for Christ. We are here today because our ancestors, our forefathers, our foremothers chose to be generous, not selfish. They chose to give because they knew God created them and us to give. We make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. Now, your challenge today might be to thank your parents. Thank your family for teaching you incredible principles in earning and saving and giving. Send them an email, fire off a text, or maybe call so they don't leave you a voicemail and you got to check your voicemail and waste time doing that. Call them. Tell them thank you for teaching you habits of how to be defined by generosity. You might be on the other side this morning and you didn't get great financial habits from your family. You maybe learned things that looked more like the prodigal, the wayward son who spent everything and more that came into his hand. You're not destined to go down the same path. You can make different financial choices. Decide today that you want to grow and build a lifestyle defined by generosity. Write in your Connect card, you want to know when the next financial peace class is, and Amanda will make sure you know when that is. We're also called in our vision statement to build the legacy that God desires. We owe an incredible debt, an amazing amount of thanks to everybody that has come before us. For everyone that's a part of Legacy today, in the present, we're called to build the church. A few years ago, the Legacy leadership team gathered in the old youth room, and we started praying and dreaming about what God would have us do next. Then, through a bunch of time and more conversations and prayers, Legacy Onward came. It to pay off all of our debts, to expand the building, to add more space for adults and students, and to take steps into the future with Legacy South and the Legacy Foundation. Through your prayers, your giving, your talents, and commitment, you've made the new space possible. You'll get to go in there today after worship if you want to. And our continued commitment to Legacy Onward over the next 2 years, we're going to see our debt completely retired. We're going to see a new campus attempted and started, and our foundation growing. In just a couple weeks, our staff and our leadership team is going to get together again, and we're going to start praying and dreaming about what is next, what God has for us in the next few years, and we're going to do it in the new youth room. That was only a dream a couple years ago. You're constantly giving of your time and your talent in all kinds of ministry areas. So kids, students, and adults can become more deeply committed followers of Jesus. You're giving your dollars to make mission and ministry happen every single day here as Legacy Church. But you know, in both of those cases, the need is always ongoing. All of the ministry areas, every single one, kids, students, adults, they all can use more help and leaders on Sundays and Wednesdays. If you track our monthly budget, you know we're needing $81,000 a month for the rest of the year, and that's up from our current yearly monthly average of $53,000. Now, we're tracking about the same as we did last year. I have no doubt we can do it again this year, but you gave me heart palpitations because we rely on an incredibly large December to make our budget. Yeah, my heart races a little bit as we end the year, but there's really only one way that we can't rely on large Decembers. It means more of us, more people, have to give more regularly and consistently, so we don't need a huge December. So friends, your challenge today, as you consider living a more generous lifestyle, it could be to take a step to volunteer in one of our ministry areas, to serve, to write in your Connect card, hey, I want to try serving in kids or in students or adults. Or maybe your next step of living extravagantly generous is to start giving consistently, giving more regularly, whether you're here on a Sunday or not. The mission and ministry continue even when you're not here. Let's say our vision statement together one more time. Because of the legacy we've received, we build the legacy God desires to leave the legacy the world needs. We honor the past, we work in the present, and we prepare for the future. So Legacy South and the Legacy Foundation are two ways that we're doing that. Just as we got our start 120 years ago as an act of generosity, we're doing it again by trying a South campus. It is incredibly cool. This is who we've been for 120 years, the people of generosity, and here we are trying it yet again. It speaks to who we are. As we get closer to Legacy South's launch date in February, prayerfully consider being a part of this Legacy 50. 50 of us who commit for 1 year to be missionaries, serving in all kinds of ways, from greeters to worship leaders. Yes, missionaries make coffee. It can be that simple. A cup of coffee can bring people to Jesus. The Legacy Foundation seeks to build an endowment where we use the interest to do new things, to fund new ministries, new ministry endeavors, and to deal with long-term capital building expenses. If you've not considered putting legacy in your will, now is the time. Because friends, the mission and ministry of legacy will continue long after all of us have gone to be with the Lord. You know, as a staff and leaders of the church, we often wonder, what is the community perception of Legacy Church? What do people in Bismarck and Mandan say about us? Do they even know that we're here? What is our reputation? From the albeit limited media coverage that we get, the thing that we hear the most often from people in the community is, oh, you're that church that gives away all that money at Christmas time. Friends, that is not a bad reputation to have at all. We have a reputation of being financially generous. One of the main reasons that we are sitting here today in a five-year-old facility was a grant of $1.4 million we got to begin construction. We got the grant for a number of reasons, but one of the major ones was because in the midst of us fundraising for a building to do ministry in, we kept the Christmas offering going. In the midst of raising millions of dollars for ourselves, we continued to give away money to those in poor and in need. We are a church defined by generosity. And we're going to do it again this Christmas. This Christmas Eve is our 10th half a Christmas challenge, and we're going to continue to be defined by generosity. Now, a couple weeks ago, I was preparing for a funeral. And as I do with every funeral, I sit down with the family, and I ask them, tell me one or two words that describe your loved one. What were those characteristics that really defined who they were? What will you always remember about them? Have you ever thought about what your family and your friends will say about you when the pastor sits down to do your funeral? We hope people will say about us that we were loving, that we were kind, that we were caring, that we're generous. If you're sitting here today and you think your family might use other words, now is the time to make a change. Now is the time to live and make steps in such a way to have your family answer the way you want them to answer, to say that you were loving and kind and caring and generous. You know, sometimes we think, I really don't feel like giving, so I'm gonna wait till I feel like it. But it doesn't work that way. We fall into the same trap when we fall out of love with our spouses, and we say, we'll just start loving them again when the feeling comes back. That's not how it works. We do loving acts, then loving things come back. We find our way back to love with our spouses by doing loving things again. We do the things that made us fall in love with them in the first place, and then the loving feelings return. That's how it works with generosity. If you want to be a person defined by generosity, start doing generous things today. Start giving your time, your talent, your treasure away, and generous feelings flow. Generous feelings flow from doing generous things, just as loving feelings flow from doing loving acts. Paul, the great church planter, gets the last word today from 2 Corinthians 9. Remember this. A farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop, but the one who plants generously will get a generous crop. You must decide each in your heart how much to give. Don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure, because God loves a person who gives cheerfully, and God will generously provide all that you need. Then you'll always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. As the scriptures say, they share freely and give generously to the poor. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and then bread to eat. In the same way, he will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. So friends, take a step this week toward extravagant generosity in your time, in your talent, maybe in a ministry area here at Legacy, or taking that step to start giving consistently. Let's take God at his word and live for others and give generously. Let's say our contentment prayer one more time as we end this series. It's on the screen for you. Lord, help me to be grateful for what I have. Remember that I don't need most of what I want, and that joy is found in simplicity and generosity. Amen.